Deborah Francis-White is a writer and comedian who's best known as the creator and host of The Guilty Feminist. The award-winning podcast considers how to be a successful feminist when surrounded by all the temptations of the 21st century. And now she's published and narrated a book of the same name that's full of the same wry humour. She joined me down the line to tell me more. Welcome to Read On.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, why are you The Guilty Feminist?
Well, The Guilty Feminist started as a podcast, and some of your listeners may know it. It's a podcast about our noble goals as 21st century feminists, but our hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine those goals. So it's like exfoliating our guilt away and laughing about it and saying it doesn't really matter. Or if it does matter, it is serious, like, let's look at it, put it on the table, work on it, build muscle. So we admit things at the top, like true things, like I'm a feminist, but one time I went to a women's rights march and I popped into a department store to use the loo. And when I was in there, I got distracted trying out face cream. And when I came out, the march was gone. So I went, okay, good that I went on the march. Next time I want to make it further. And at first I thought, oh my goodness, I'll get the feminists will kick me out of the club if they hear my confessions. But actually, I discovered that so many other women and men who identify as feminists and, of course, non-binary people said, yes, I also do this. Sometimes I feel a bit claustrophobic at a march and I leave, or sometimes I feel I should be watching this four-hour documentary about the suffragettes, but in fact, I flip over and watch Say Yes to the Dress. Finding those things funny and confessing them means that we can let it go, as opposed to sort of secretly holding on to it and thinking, I don't think I'm a good enough feminist then to speak up at that meeting and say, hey, guys, this isn't right, or advocate for people who may not be in the room. And one thing that the podcast is really strong on is not just, you know, saying when white, straight, cis, non-disabled women have as many rights and advantages and as much representation as white, straight, cis, non-disabled men, then we're sorted. That's not the case at all. We really need to be advocating for each other. And it's really important that white women are constantly saying, hold on a minute, there's no women of colour on this panel. Why not? You know, we need to get somebody here. We need to have representation. Or for, you know, feminists to be saying that this building that we're having this meeting is inaccessible. How are disabled people going to feel it's possible to come if it's not accessible, or if we haven't thought about that? So the podcast is really, over the time of I've been doing it, which is 2.5 years, I've learned so much from our guests who are women of colour or from the LGBTQ community or are disabled feminists, about how I can be a better feminist and think outside my own experience and understand that there are people who have far fewer advantages than I do, and I need to be advocating and allying for them.
And that actually brings me on to my next question, which was going to be, what do you think disabled groups can learn from feminism? But presumably it's the inclusivity, and maybe actually the blind charities should talk to deaf charities, who should talk to learning difficulty charities.
Sure. I mean, it's the thing with disability, you know, it's not a culture, because every group that seeks to represent as people with a certain disability has completely different challenges, you know, from other groups. But you're right, you know, working together. I think essentially feminism is a demand for inclusion. You know, feminists need to be advocating for disabled women. And also, you know, non-disabled women need to understand that they have privileges that disabled men don't have. So, you know, we very much subscribe to intersectional feminism, which means that your gender, you know, where you can be pushed into the margins because of your gender. If you watch or listen to television, you will see that there are many, many more men represented in positions of power and influence than women. But our gender intersects with disability. It intersects with race. It intersects with sexual orientation and gender identity.
So can a man be a feminist?
Oh, for sure. Feminism is just a demand for inclusion and a recognition that there is a power imbalance and a representation imbalance between men and women. If you're advocating for that gender balance to be closed, whether you're a man or a woman or you're non-binary, you are absolutely a feminist.
And have toxic men like
Donald Trump and Harvey Weinstein in a perverse way helped the feminist movement by focusing attention on just how negative men's attitudes can be towards women?
I think it's centering them to say that it's helped feminism. I don't think you can ever say Harvey Weinstein and Donald Trump have helped feminism. That's like they're the reason we need feminism. So, you know, feminism is a demand for change. It would be better if we didn't need to have such an extreme change. So, no, I don't think you can say that they've helped feminism when they're the reason we need it. But certainly I do think that the election of Donald Trump alerted the world to the fact that it was like a jolt. It was a wake-up call that things have been sliding further to the right for a long time. And it was sort of like punctuated equilibrium. We just suddenly went, oh my goodness, if someone like Donald Trump, who said such misogynistic things about women over the years, and the so-called locker room talk, which was so extreme, where he was recorded on that bus, and still women voted for him as well as men, admittedly largely white women, then yes, we need feminism. So I would say it did alert us to how much more urgent feminism was. And I think it's activated a lot of feminists.
Now, as far as writing the book is concerned, did you find yourself putting in different material or going more deeply into the material you had than you did with the podcast?
Totally, yeah. I was able to do a much more deep dive and really think about what I thought about feminism and construct an argument. And, you know, normally you've got a guest on, you've got a co-host, you've got a theme of the week. You know, there's a lot to juggle. And so it was great to be able to sit down with my own thoughts and do some research and rethink what I thought about feminism and why the idea of guilty feminism, which is basically the idea that we don't have to be perfect to be a force for meaningful change. It's all right to admit, like, this week, like, I did this and this, this, but oils, I did this, this, and this, and to build muscle and to try and make yourself a stronger feminist is worthwhile. So I was able to form an argument, and really, I think the conclusion I came to when I was writing the book was feminism is not just a movement that stands against something. It's a movement that stands for something. And with this new wave of feminism, we've taken control of the means of production. Because of the internet, we're able to publish podcasts and blogs and videos, and we're able to make stuff. And what's exciting about that is, instead of just pointing at something and saying, we don't want that, we can start to create the world we do want to live in. We can become architects, not just critics. That's what's really exciting.
And I think that's something that disabled groups would like to be following in your footsteps very quickly, as far as that's concerned.
Oh, completely. Start to create the space you want to live in and try and start to be part of the new fabric. Like, we don't just have to bring a hammer to knock something down. We have to bring bricks to build something new.
Exactly.
And that's what the guilty feminist is. It's a microclimate where women do well, and women from all of these other marginalized groups that we've referenced can be celebrated, and the assumption is when they come on the show they're going to be amazing, and the live audience cheer them, and you see the women on the podcast soar in a way that they can't if they're like one woman on a panel of six, or where everyone else is a man, or one person of color, one person with a disability explaining what it's like to be disabled. You know, rather having a mainstream space where a bunch of different disabled people can, or a variety of different blind people could say, hey, we all have these different experiences, or, oh yeah, that's a common shared experience. And they can make something fun and funny and compelling and entertaining and relatable. I mean, that's the most wonderful thing to do, rather than just sort of going into those mainstream spaces which have been designed for and by white, straight, posh men who are not disabled, and trying to sort of just sit on the end and just speak for your group. Rather, your group creates a space that other people wish to inhabit. That's the most exciting thing.
Exactly. Be proactive rather than reactive.
Exactly, yeah. It's exciting.
Now, you have helped make your book as accessible as possible by narrating it as well, haven't you?
I have. I've done an audiobook, and because I'm a podcaster and I'm a comedian, I really enjoyed performing it, and I feel like there's a sort of added element. So I feel like listening to the book, in some ways, the listeners will get more dimension. So I really hope that the audiobook is popular with everyone. So I think, you know, for your listeners, they may be getting more with the audiobook than some of the readers are getting with the print book, because, you know, my intention can be there in the way that I tell the joke. We recorded little bits and pieces of it in front of a live audience. The last chapter in front of a live audience, you're getting the audience laughing. So yeah, I think it was a really fun thing to do. And people kept saying, isn't it hard to read out a book, because it takes days to do it and it's quite tiring? And I was like, it's a lot easier reading a book than it is writing a book, let me tell you. So writing it is the hard part. Reading it out, that's the fun part.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to listening to it, as I'm sure are my wife and two daughters. So they can hold me up for comparison as to whether my feminist credentials measure up.
Amazing. Okay, we look forward to it.
Deborah Francis-White, thank you so much for being a guest on Read On, and best of luck with the book.
It's been an unqualified delight. The Guilty Feminist is available now in audiobook. Hope you enjoy it, and please tweet me at DeborahFW and tell me what you thought.
Make sure I will do. Thank you so much.
The Guilty Feminist is available commercially in print, ebook, and as an audiobook that Deborah Francis-White narrates herself.